Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, the podcast that pulls back the curtain on the evolving world of sports science. I'm Andrew Rizza, an athlete trainer with decades of experience in professional, collegiate, and high school sports.
And I'm Cameron Roth, an orthopedic surgeon and a consultant for the Chicago White Sox.
In each episode, we'll explore the real-world challenges and opportunities facing today's human performance professionals.
Our hands-on experience is transforming sports medicine and breaking barriers through innovation and teamwork.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. This week, I'm welcoming Tom Denninger, physical therapist for ATI Physical Therapy. Tom is a board-certified clinical specialist in orthopedic physical therapy, and he's also a fellow of the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. Tom's current position is vice president of clinical development for ATI Physical Therapy, and I feel like this would be a great conversation to have with Tom on what clinical development is and what the ATI is doing. Tom, welcome. Thank you for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Appreciate the invite, Andrew. Excited to be here.
Can you give the listener just a little bit of background about you? You know, how long you've been practicing or practice clinically, and then what drove you into your current role as the vice president of clinical development?
Yeah, kind of fell into PT. I was playing football and injured my back. As most physical therapists, they have some sort of injury that's part of their origin story. So I kind of discovered physical therapy that way. Graduated from Sacred Heart University, my DPT, and also stayed there for my orthopedic residency. And then had an opportunity to come down here to Greenville, South Carolina, and started as a staff clinician, became, you know, multi-site CD, ran the region for a little bit, and then had an opportunity to move into more of a support role within kind of our first iteration of clinical excellence, supporting our clinicians with mentorship, CEU, residencies, fellowship, things along those lines. Went through a little bit of journey in the organization, helped support our sales team just in helping them kind of grow their knowledge of what PT and what good PT and outcomes and things like that are. During COVID, helped stand up our telehealth platform, and then worked a bit, you know, for a couple of years within our leadership development space before kind of coming back to clinical excellence in my current role. And, you know, practicing seeing patients throughout up until about 2020, when we were standing up the telehealth platform, saw a couple of patients virtually, but following that, you know, didn't have as much opportunity other than subbing in for mentorship sessions for in our residency program. Still sneak into the clinic as much as I can. Oh, someone's out sick. Sure. Yes. Happy to cover that. But ultimately made the decision to step away from maintaining a schedule because my lack of availability was becoming kind of a barrier for patients' improvement more than anything. But still, you know, my role exists to support our clinicians, help them become kind of the clinicians that they want to be, whether it's, you know, pursuing a specialty, you know, being very well-rounded and expert or even kind of thinking about what non-clinical life might look like for them and as they kind of grow and progress.
Yeah, that's great to hear about like kind of your journey coming, you know, I guess kind of full circle back to education, because you start education, you go into clinical development, you know, as a clinician into the clinical realm and then back to education. And I have to say, you know, when we were acquired by ATI Physical Therapy back in, I think it was 2016 or 17, the clinical excellence piece really wasn't there for us. And I think that's one of the things that people wanted was to try to have more education at our fingertips, where even though that a lot of us were practicing for a long time, it's how do we get better at what we do? And I have to say, I went through MSK certification last year, and there's a lot of things that we kind of like let slip away from us that were not available to us. So for me, I felt like it was a great opportunity, and being out for almost 30 years of practice from education, and then, you know, going back and getting, you know, a master's degree and or a couple of master's degrees, it's good to be able to have that availability and to get better clinically. So you guys are doing a great job with that, and hopefully there's clinicians that can take more advantage of it.
No, that's great. I appreciate that. I mean, there's been a lot of growth for us. I mean, the first iteration for clinical excellence for ATI started in actually 2017, mm-hmm. had a kind of initial phase, then kind of a little bit of a pause and restart. And then just over the last couple of years under leadership of Chuck Thigpen, we've really been able to build those capabilities and functionalities out. I think in a post-COVID world, post-professional education has changed. Certainly there's more openness to different learning modalities, whereas kind of when you and I cut our teeth, it was the weekend course, right? Yeah. And even as, you know, some of these subscription CEU and distance learning things were coming online, they work, yeah, but, you know, PT, athletic training, whatever, it's a hands-on skill, you know, how can you not? And I think we learned a lot. Not all distance education is good education. There are certainly things that do much better when you're in a hands-on environment and you're working with someone who can give you great feedback and things along those lines. But we've really seen a shift in learners in that instead of it being, well, what do I want to learn? A lot of the conversation has moved more toward, well, what am I willing to give up my weekend or my evening for? So I think the consumer is a little bit more discerning in terms of that. And that's made us really need to start to think about how do we get great information and also education that's likely to impact practice, right? Not just learning for the sake of learning and, oh, that was nice. I feel a little bit smarter. It's not going to change what I do. But whether it's using asynchronous type stuff like the MSK certificate, like you talked about, or even doing more live virtual type things during longer tracks, right? Lunches over a couple weeks or two or three evening seminars that build on each other. We're just finding a lot of people want to learn more that way. The days of the 16-hour, 24-hour, you know, two- or three-day weekend course, it's tough. People are saying that's not what I'm looking for.
Yeah, and I have to agree because, you know, I sit on the Board of Allied Health for the state of Massachusetts, and we went through the CEU edition this last couple of years. It was, well, how do we offer those CEUs in the state? Like, who has eligibility? How are they going to get it? A lot of people just had a lot of questions on, well, what do I have to be in person? Can I do it online? Can it be asynchronous? Like, how do we make this work? And for us as athletic trainers too, like athletic trainers have to maintain the BOC. So we do this every 2 years. For PTs in the state of Massachusetts, they haven't had to do it unless they lived in another state. So for them now, it's kind of come, like you said, kind of full circle for them. Like, okay, now it's, I have to try to figure out what works for me, what is going to make me better as a clinician, and how do I do that? And I think for us as a company, we can offer that to them here, right? And have the ability for them to get better at whatever they want to do. And there's a whole bunch of things they can kind of choose from. It's just, you know, how do we do it? And how do we do it in a way that it's valuable to them? Which kind of goes into the conversation of MSK certification. And can you give like a little background about what that is to the listener and how that is something that's specific to ATI physical therapy and who can actually be involved and get into it actually, who's eligible for it?
Great question. So back in, I believe it was 2021, had, you know, one of our operators kind of come to me and say, hey, we have this great residency program. And at the time we had kind of spread out, you know, it was in a couple locations, but during kind of COVID, we really retracted to South Carolina. And they were like, how do we really expand the residency? And I'm always thirsty on that. And over the past year, we've really been able to expand it again in 2024. So our residencies are now in Greenville, South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, Boston, Massachusetts, Chicago, Illinois, Phoenix, Arizona, and soon Seattle, Washington, which is great. But essentially, I said, I think what you're asking for is not really what you want, right? Residency is wonderful, right? The major, major piece of a residency is mentorship, great mentorship. And I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but access to good information is readily available. It's all about organizing it in a way that people feel like they're being taken on it and you used the word before, value. They feel like it's valuable. They feel it's not learning for the sake of learning. It's learning for the sake of improving their clinical skills and their patient outcomes. So we took the step and we made the decision that we were essentially going to digitize the residency didactic content and make it available to all of our clinicians in a very, very lifestyle format. So it was going to be asynchronous. We made some intentional decisions about it being about an hour and a half to 2 hours per week because we figured, hey, you know, I don't want to have to give up something to learn this. I don't want to have to miss, you know, my Wednesday night volleyball league, you know, sort of thing. So it was all asynchronous, a very manageable chunk of information, but arranged in a 5-course series that goes through kind of foundations and then kind of the 4 main body regions, lower extremity, cervicothoracic, lumbopelvic, and ultimately upper extremity, resulting in about 50, 60 hours of content that when we initially launched it was more on a cohort basis. So people were kind of governed week to week. We've subsequently made it kind of on demand so people can start whenever they want. They can pause whenever they want. They can, you know, do more, do less, you know, flex around the holidays, all sorts of things. But To date, we've had about 1,200 people go through that program. So these are physical therapists, physical therapy assistants, athletic trainers. We've had some nurses. We've had some occupational therapists kind of go through this content. We've made different versions of it, you know, slightly for kind of the individual or the individual profession, but enabled it with CEUs. So mm-hmm. it's approved for about 50 hours of CEUs, you know, in all the states that ATI is at. And we've really seen interesting use cases. One, people have really enjoyed it, but it's been interesting to see how variable the users are. Some of them are new grads and they're mm-hmm. like, hey, this has been great at building my confidence. I know I've heard some of this stuff before. This has really reinforced it. Other folks have been, you know, maybe they've been practicing for a bit, but maybe they were in a different setting. Hey, I was in home health. I had apprehension about coming to outpatient because I knew my skill set had changed. This has been great at really fine-tuning my clinical reasoning and reinforcing what skills I'm going to need kind of in the clinic. There's been folks who have been out for a long period of time and, hey, this is a nice refresher. This is giving me some new ideas. This is reminding me of things that maybe I should be doing that I'm not. So we've seen lots of different use cases for it, and it's been a really cool experience to see how well received it's been.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I mean, the stuff that Jackie Davenport put in and like some of the lumbopelvic stuff that a lot of us are still kind of like, people don't always enjoy treating those. Is like, hey, how do we actually get better at doing this and providing the best for our patients that are coming through the door? So I always would just do mine on Sunday mornings and kind of bang it out. No one's up in the house, get my stuff done. And then that week, like, hey, I learned something new. Let's try it with this patient and see if this actually works and makes them feel better, because they were kind of stalling with treatment. Or if you had another clinician in the clinic that was having struggles with some of their progressions with their patients, it was nice to have. So like you had alluded to, like it was easy enough for us to do it at our own pace and not feel like you had to be on it like on Monday or Tuesday. It's like whenever you can get it done. And if you decided to wait and do a chunk at week three instead of doing every week, do something, you had the availability to do that. So I thought it's a great and well put together platform.
No, that's great. It's been awesome to see it continue to evolve. It's all arranged around the idea of clinical practice guidelines, but also rehab classification, mm-hmm. so that we're similarly speaking a language, but it's not going to the 10%, right? The minutia. It's, hey, how do you look at a population of patients and set them up for success, you know, kind of from the start, knowing that people are going to evolve. But I think, you know, what I've realized is, especially as I've gotten on in my career, you take a course and you feel like you kind of have it, so that the longer you go, sometimes the more niche you're looking for in terms of, oh, I haven't taken that, I need to do this. And ultimately, if we look at other healthcare professionals, a lot of CEU is around doing the basics really, really well and revisiting things so that you get evidentiary updates or you get reminders of gold standards of practice. And I think as a profession, it's a place where we can improve, because as people get on in their career, oh, I've already taken that, I've already mm-hmm. done that. As we've gone through some stuff looking at dry needling, we're really seeing, hey, if you've been doing this now for 10 or 15 years, and you haven't taken anything since that initial 6, 12, 18 months, there's probably a keen opportunity for you to take a fundamentals course and refresh those skills. It's mm-hmm. not to belittle the experience that you have and the expertise that you have, but kind of to your experience, you're going to be reminded of some stuff that you've kind of lost along the way and failed to consider that, oh, well, maybe if I had done it that, or, you know, oh, I forgot about that muscle, or I forgot about that technique, or, you know what, I'm not doing a good enough job assessing whether a range of motion restriction is due to hypertonicity versus hypomobility. Mm-hmm. You know, so just we need to do the basics really well.
Yeah, I have to agree. And it's, you know, you don't use it, you lose it type of thing. And I think we're all professionals and nobody's perfect, I always say. And we're always here to grow and get better. I mean, that's what we're here to do, is make people better. And if we can't be the best that we can be by continuing to learn, then we're not going to evolve. And I think evolution is a big thing for us, especially in our workspace. We want to be the best at what we can do. So that being said, the value and the growth within what we have for MSK certification, is this where MSCA came out of? And is that the growth and development like vision for the company or for you and Chuck? Like how did that come out?
Yeah, no, great question. So IMESCA stands for Institute for Musculoskeletal Advancement. About 14, 15 months ago, we started having some preliminary conversations. Hey, ATI has a long track record of education, you know, residency, fellowship, certification, CEU courses, whatever. We also have a long history of research. Does it make sense to organize that work under a separate not-for-profit organization? Why do that? Well, one, from an education perspective, hey, we think there's people that would be interested in accessing some of these things that maybe are in ATI employees, and that helps set the road for that capability that we're kind of currently slowly building toward. And the other piece being from a research perspective, you know, sometimes as a for-profit organization, we are shut out from different funding opportunities or potentially some partnerships. You know, sometimes a little bit of a bookkeeping thing. Hey, we received a grant. All of a sudden, hey, where did that go? You know, just a little bit, you know, having a separate entity that you can really say, hey, this is the education piece. This is the research piece. This is how we can form partnerships. This is how we can pursue different grant funding for investigation. It just made a lot of sense to kind of go down that road. So along with being the vice president of clinical development for ATI, I serve as the executive director for IMISCA. You have a full board. We have an advisory board that has different academic and community partners. But ultimately, it's the pursuit, you know, of improving care through education, improving education through research, and then also having research inform that education. So kind of you have those three pillars that all feed on itself.
Now, who's eligible to get into that program? How do they get in if they're interested, and who's really eligible for it?
Yeah, so just from an educational perspective, we're making our CEU courses externally facing. You know, those are apparent on the IMISCA website, which is i-msk.org. But we also have what's considered a research fellowship. So the research fellowship really came from an inception of the research process is daunting. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of folks are aspirationally kind of, hey, I think I like research. I like reading research. You know, I would love to publish something. I would love to have an opportunity to present something, but I don't know where to start. And also, hey, maybe I'm interested in pursuing my terminal degree, but I'd like to kind of look before I leap or kind of dip my toe into it. The other side of that is, you know, when we start a project, there is a lot of administration that goes into it, right? Whether it's true data collection, whether it's analysis, whether it's reference organization, whether it's, you know, just processing agreements between partners. And research, you know, Chuck, Ellen Shanley, Adam Lutz, you know, have been highly productive, but a lot of that has come from kind of side of desk. And when work is side of desk, that administrative stuff can really be what holds up the process. So try to solve one problem with another. We have folks who are interested in research. We have research work that needs to get done. Why don't we form a research fellowship? So when we thought of this, it's initially for ATI employees only, but we hope to open this out after that. Essentially, think of it as part-time jobs. So folks that are brought in as a research fellow, they don't decrease their clinical hours. It's you know, they're working 10 hours a week on research on top of those hours and getting paid for it pretty well, you know, by the way, too. About 10 hours a week and getting involved. So we started with six research fellows that were all ATI clinicians, five PTs and an OT. You know, we're looking to expand that and as more projects and funding and interest kind of comes online. But it's a great way for folks to learn about research in case they're interested in kind of pursuing that terminal degree, that being a larger part of their professional life going forward.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming this doesn't matter location of geographic location. It's more or less, you know, in communication with the lead researchers and the department in order to be able to be part of it.
Yep, absolutely. So nationwide, we have someone in Nevada, two people in Texas, someone in Illinois, Delaware, and there's going to be one that escapes me, but we have six right now.
That's good. So what's the ultimate vision and the growth of like the clinical development within the company? Where do you see it going from here? What's the next 12, 24, 36 months look like? Is there anything bigger coming up, or is it, we want to really develop this, get this where we need it to be. And then if there's something else that comes up or interest elsewhere within the company, we'll then grow it to something different.
Yeah, I think the best ideas come from our people. So a lot of it is listening to what people are interested in, as opposed to just, oh, well, I think this might be interesting for me. If people aren't interested, it's not going to be worth its salt. So One thing, we're going to continue to expand the residency. We have a couple sites in mind over the next couple years based off the success and the interest that we're getting from it. We have an upper extremity athlete fellowship. Right now, we have three partnerships. Folks come to Greenville for 6 months, and then they go to Arizona for 6 months to work with the Colorado Rockies, Kansas City Royals, and Chicago Cubs. We're looking to expand that. We have many teams that are interested in, and I think we're at the place right now where, well, maybe people don't have to come to Greenville for 6 months. Maybe that could be in Chicago. Maybe they could do a full year in Phoenix. So we'll look to continue. We have a couple other different fellowships that we're currently looking at. Maybe it's a lower extremity athlete fellowship. Maybe it is, you know, a primary care PT fellowship. Maybe it's a hand and upper extremity fellowship. So all sorts of things where there's not just business need for specialists to be developed, but there's also a lot of interest that's kind of there. We'll continue to expand our offering, especially through asynchronous and live virtual learning, just because, like we talked about, that's the modality that people are really looking for. And we think, you know, building off the MSK certificate and the success with that and the lessons learned, we can continue to do that. And then on the research side, just continuing to find great partners that have great clinical questions that we can partner with them on. We have a lot of data. You know, we have one of the largest rehab repositories. So partners have questions that we can answer retrospectively looking at that. And that can often be the first step toward larger lines of inquiry. Hey, let's validate this assumption here. Okay, how do we move that more to a prospective type investigation to kind of validate that observation and fine tune kind of the best practices for it? So we've done a lot of building in 2024 and I think in 2025, but ultimately that's going to be dictated on what people are interested in.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes back to our conversations here in the clinic where we get the employee surveys and People are, you know, what is important? How do you think things are developing within the company? And I always tell the clinicians or the staff, you know, make sure you write in those boxes where you can write something because they do get, you know, received and they are read and there's thought put behind that versus not being, you know, thoughtful of it. And if you want something done, you gotta, the more people are like kind of the squeaky wheel gets the grease, the more you say, the more gets done. So I think everybody is very interested in furthering their education and getting better at what they do because they wouldn't be doing what they do if they didn't want to do that. So I really do like what the company's doing. I like what you guys are building. And I'm excited to see what's coming down the pipe because I think there's, like you said, with the fellowships are amazing, especially upper extremity. If someone's an overhead upper extremity person, baseball, swimming, whatever it may be, it seems like the place to be with Chuck. Chuck has done a ton of research with lumbar extremity and so has an Ellen. But what better places to be than Greenville in Arizona for a year? I mean, better than Boston for 6 months in the winter. But there's a lot to be learned. And like you said, just the ability to be able to grow into even lower extremity, depending on how you can build that fellowship program, I think it's an amazing thing. So it's awesome. I think one of the things that we hear a lot of, especially here now, because we talked, you know, for a second about CEU involvement and how do we gain CEUs in this state, especially in Massachusetts. If somebody's looking to get a CEU opportunity or have a count towards, you know, there's ethics and, you know, legal ethics in development and then also just the normal CEs, how does someone within the company get that? Like, how can they search for it if they don't know? Like, what's the best way for them to be able to take advantage of what we have available to get credit for that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So when we think about CEU and continuing competence, there's always things that are internal and there's things that are external. And as we kind of talked about, I'm trying to merge those things a little bit more. But, you know, when we moved on our LMS early this year, We lost some of our clinical content. And that's why we've been really trying to lean in there and build that out. And actually, it's interesting you called out ethics, jurisprudence, and implicit bias. Like those are all things that different states require. And over the last couple of months, people have been reaching out during renewals. And I'm like, actually kind of need to direct you to kind of these external things. But in early 2025, we'll actually have internal courses. These approvals or course approvals have already gone through for asynchronous courses. Mm-hmm. We're in the process of just doing our final checks and whatnot before we can kind of roll them out. So those will all be available within our internal learning management system. Everyone from ATI knows it as Absorb, you know, and then from an external perspective, there's so much more out there now than I think people realize. You know, MedBridge, for instance, was kind of first and has this big clinical library out there. But, you know, there are certainly other vendors that if you feel like you've been with kind of one library and you want to kind of look around, there certainly are other ones like physicaltherapy.com or Summit. And this is not paid promotion by any means. Yeah. You know, just there's more opportunity and options out there. So if you're looking for something, whether it's a specific state requirement or you're looking for kind of CEU about, because, hey, I noticed that my patients with knee pain don't get better, mm-hmm. or my patients with shoulder pain. The search engine optimization on Google is pretty good, you know, that you're going to find a lot of stuff and you're going to be able to discern, hey, is this something I want to do in person? Is this something that, you know, I just want to join as a membership and have an a la carte that I can kind of take, you know, at my own pace? Or is there a formatted plan of study that's going to start here and end here? Because I know myself as a learner that, you know, I thrive on urgency. And if this is something that's not going to be urgent until, you know, I have to do that state renewal, maybe that's not the best thing for me. You know, I need something that's a bit more structured. So there's a lot of opportunities out there. We're building a lot internally that goes even beyond the clinical piece. It also encompasses those other requirements. And also we're building a good bit, and this was kind of my former life within the ATI Academy, of building, you know, professional competencies, whether mm-hmm. it's leadership, time management, accountability, things along those lines, which honestly, all of those things translate into the clinic as well. You right. know, I mean, my favorite example, you know, you went through training on SL2, right? Yep. SL2 training is great from a leadership perspective and a coaching perspective, and also a clinical perspective, because what does this patient need? Are they very motivated? Are they not very motivated? Are mm-hmm. they competent in what they're doing? Are they, you know, not, are they not competent? All of those different frameworks and things aren't just leadership. They're not just professional. They're very much clinically oriented too. So a lot of those resources on our kind of internal offerings as well. And that's a piece that I think is going to continue to grow on an external perspective. You being on a state education board, if there is a submission for, let's say it like time management, mm-hmm. you know, it certainly takes you aback. You're like, wait a minute, like this isn't, you know, standard CEU. This isn't a thing. But if it has clear-cut objectives and it's about helping people organize their day so that they're accomplishing the patient goals and objectives within a session and things along those lines, like time management can make someone wildly more successful as a clinician and also probably improve their work-life balance. You know, in terms of, I was not someone who was great at documenting as I go. All my documentation stayed for that evening, right?
Right, right.
Hey, this could be a professional engagement piece. It could make me more effective as a therapist. So even though it's not traditional CEU because it's not, you know, evidence-based management of, you know, the throwing elbow, it might have huge implications for our providers and our patients.
Yeah. I mean, documentation and time management is one of the things that we recommend quite often to people that are, you know, that need a little bit more coaching and development on the state level. So it is there. And the other thing too is, I mean, your MSK certification carries CEs, right? So anybody that wants to get a lot of CEs, you can do your MSK certification, but also learn a lot. So I think,
yeah, and I mean, that was the lessons learned. I mean, people are busy. If learning doesn't have CEUs attached to it, it's just a little bit of a more of an incline to get someone to kind of commit and do. Our enrollment, I think, like tripled within 6 months because we went from kind of the first cohort where we didn't have it approved to the second cohort where we did. And all of a sudden it was, you know, now two birds with one stone. I think PTs and athletic trainers and occupational therapists want to learn, but also there's a balance piece to say, hey, if I'm learning, I want to make sure that I'm going to get credit for my renewal with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree 100%. And, you know, you gave a lot of insight to what's out there. I mean, I always tell clinicians too, well, you can always just go to MedBridge, and if for a very inexpensive membership, if you need the ethics piece or the jurisprudence piece, you can find it there, or just find a course that's comparable, because the state of Massachusetts doesn't have anything yet and that's going to be coming, I think, in 2025. Something should be out for Mass, but for right now, anything that's close to that in another state, it'll be accepted. So whoever's listening that's in Mass, you can do that. So you don't have to be delinquent in that discipline. So for additional offerings that, you know, the company has available, you know, as far as, you know, kind of staff clinical growth and development, we already talked about like how you're going to try to expand the platform. And we talked a little bit about mentorship, not really just, you know, brush at us for a second. Do you feel like mentorship is going to be that other piece that is going to be just more evolving, getting more people involved for those clinicians that are coming on? As you know, we had the first 50, right, for new grads coming out or new employees. How do you think mentorship is going to evolve? And do you feel like it's going to grow to this, you know, to the point where doesn't matter where the person is, they can be mentored by anybody within the company, within the platform? If it's somebody, hey, if they want Tom Denninger to mentor them, is Tom Denninger available? So how do you think that's going to evolve? And is it already evolving to the point where you feel like it's a good platform for us?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a formal mentorship program since 2017. Mm-hmm. And I think kind of in the initial couple years, it was really, really rigid, you know, and it was, hey, on this visit with this person, you're going to do this type of eval. And, you know, a lot of logistical nightmares. It was one of those things where if you were able to do it, it went really well. Mm-hmm. But there was just so many barriers in place that it had to be the perfect storm to kind of actually go right. You know, following COVID, our current mentorship program has been existing since around 2021, 2022. And we kind of took the other direction and said, hey, we want this very flexible kind of thing, right? You know, you're going to have a mentor. This is someone who you can text, you can email. They're going to do, you know, 8 either calls or in-persons with you over 4 months, right? First kind of weekly for the first month, then every other week, and then kind of a monthly check-in. And it's just, hey, what do you need, right? Because everyone mm-hmm. needs something different, right? You know, if you or I went to another place, you know, we might not have the questions about clinical care, but we'd be like, hey, let's talk about your platform. How do I do this? How do I not take notes home? Whatever those things are, versus someone who is very tech savvy, but maybe a newer clinician. Like, I need someone to talk to me about, you know, this patient with knee OA because I understand what knee OA is, mm-hmm. but when I do this, they say it hurts and they need much more clinical care. So we wanted to make it very, very flexible. What we have found is we need to split the middle, as always. Yeah. We need a flexible scaffolding around that, which gives people enough so that it's not just so open-ended. Because if you don't know what you need, then you're going to feel like you didn't get it regardless.
Right.
You know, so, hey, here are the things that people typically need some support on, or here are some things that we can go down in. I think the program can always get better. We've seen some nice course corrections on people getting assigned, sessions happening, but we really do need to continue to decrease unwanted variability so that we can have, you know, a high value kind of experience across the platform. So I think that's the formal mentorship program. I always like to point out, mentorship is such a vogue word out there. When we think about how people learn, it comes down to this kind of universal principle of like 70-20-10. Mm-hmm. Right? 70% of what you learn is going to be by doing, right? 20% is going to come from projects and collaboration, and 10 is going to come from, you know, kind of didactic information, things along those lines. Mentorship, I think, falls in that 20% where it should enhance the 70 and the 10. Mm-hmm. Having that person who's investing in you as a person, right? The other thing that I'm really passionate about, some people aren't great mentors because they really want to be teachers. Yeah. And not all teachers really are great mentors, right? Mm-hmm. Mentors should be kind of the guide on the side, right? I do have a cadre of resources that might be helpful, but I'm going to help you arrive at the need for those. I'm going to ask mm-hmm. really good questions. I'm not going to tell you what you should do. I'm not going to give you the curriculum, you know, to kind of pursue. I think if a mentor can make an individual better at asking themselves questions, reflecting on that 70%, or reflecting on the 10% of didactic learning so that they can bring it into their practice, that's huge.
Yeah.
We need to continue to invest in our mentors. We need to make, you know, it not just a matter of like, hey, I'm really passionate about this. Like, there has to be a whiffum for them into it, other than hey, it's a nice thing and I feel good about it. And we also need to help them kind of continue to be better mentors so that they can use that flexible framework and build that kind of relationship. So mentorship, something I'm super passionate about. We've been in this space for a while. We need to continue to get better, no doubt about it.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we talk about it often. And I think I talk about it with other colleagues, and I still have mentors that I go to 30 years out of school. So, I mean, for me, other clinicians, physicians, you know, former athletes that I've treated that become orthopedics, you know, bounce stuff off of them when something comes to the door. Our clinicians here, I use caseload rounds like, hey, look, this is a great place for us to talk about things that you may not be understanding. And that's a mentor, you know, a part of a mentorship that we can do on weekly, which doesn't have to be very formal. It's informal. What questions do you have? Let's go over some of those things. Like you said, how do they get to the answer that they're looking for, and how do they get better? And it's always evolving. I always say it's not something that has to be super formal. It doesn't have to be informal. It can kind of be like split the middle, like you said, and it's for the clinician to get better. And all of us need it, I think. And it's just, how do you get to it and what's important to you? So yeah, I think it's definitely always evolving. We always need it. And it has gotten better from where it was, right? And I think we had one of our clinicians here that's second year out of Tufts PT program, and Wayne Bonkowski was her mentor. So Wayne had come over 3 or 4 times, and I've known Wayne since he's been with the company. And they had informal discussions and also ones in the clinic, which were great, where he's sat with her and went through some evaluations and treatment plans. And I thought it was very valuable for her, and it was good. But then she also had me to be able to bounce things off of during clinical rounds, so which was awesome. So definitely good.
Yeah, I really encourage people. I mean, some, you know, like I said, very familiar, mentorship. I need mentorship. What's mentorship program? Things along those lines. Like, and it can be sometimes a little bit weird where you're like, will you be my mentor? Like, that's not kind of always how that works. Like, I do think a program is good, and someone being assigned that skill at doing it is important. But I always encourage people to think a little bit more of like the cabinet. Like, what's your professional cabinet? How do you collect people, you know, that, you know, you can bounce ideas off of, you know, whether it's a case, whether it's professional advice. Hey, I'm here in my career. You're someone that, you know, I admire. Tell me about your decisions, how you got there, things along those lines. But I think sometimes we put too much pressure on both parties when it's like, you know, hey, will you be my mentor? Yes, I'll be your mentor. You know, hey, most of these things are relatively informal, and you build it. If I look back at my mentors, none of them came from a formal mentorship program. No. They all came from proximity. Mm-hmm. Hey, this was my manager. This is someone who I worked side to side with, who had more experience with me, or I've worked with them on projects. Hey, we decided to do this presentation together, and we formed a great relationship, and we had lots of good conversations, and I continue to go back to those for it. Form a professional cabinet. Don't, you know, do a rose ceremony with someone like, will you be my mentor? That's not how that works in reality, I think.
Yeah. And I also think there's a form of just trust, right? And respect. So I think if you trust the person that you're confiding in, I think that's the important piece. Like, you've listened, you've watched, you've stood across the room or treated right next to them for years. And that's the person that you would go to. And because you saw the outcome, you saw the buy-in, you saw the results that they end up getting with their patients. And for you, it's like, okay, what would I do in this situation? Well, let me go ask Jim. You know, Jim, what do you think? You know, how can I get around, you know, this difficult time with this patient, or I'm having difficulty with getting results? The prognosis isn't what I want it to be. Like, what do you think? And that's a good way to open up, to be able to try to use that person to your advantage, but also it's good for them too, because they're on that other end of it, of trying to educate you as best they can. But it also, like you said, it's that informal piece to mentorship, which I think is very valuable. And like you said, I think it's better than something being more formal.
And the two-way street of mentorship is important, right? By, you know, me being your mentor, it's helping me reflect on my practice and helping me identify gaps in my knowledge. So it should always be mutually beneficial. It you know, and that helps protect against this idea of, you're my mentor, please teach me everything I need to know, as opposed to, hey, we're working together, we're practicing, we're going to run into some questions. Hey, I know this, you know this. This very collaboratively kind of problem solving and just ongoing dialogue that I think are really the characteristics of the richest relationships.
Yeah. I was talking to an orthopedic surgeon. He was one of my earlier episodes, and he said he calls other surgeons. Like if he has a difficult case coming up the next day, he'll call one of his mentors and say, hey, listen, you know, I got this case coming up. How would you approach this? And I'm like, you're really, you know, and it took me back. I was like, wait a sec, you're actually calling, you're doing a procedure tomorrow and you're calling another surgeon to say, hey, how would you navigate this if I run into this? And that kind of gave me a little bit more perspective on, you know, what we do every day and how we work with our staff and our peers, you know? So for us, it's like, hey, we should be doing the same thing if we have something coming in and really looking at, I have this evaluation coming in. Hey, how would you maybe pursue it if you're hung up on it? And I think that just makes us better all the way around. So it's good stuff.
Absolutely.
So for, as far as the clinical excellence or development piece, what's some of the feedback that you've received with the offerings that have been available for the company and also to the clinicians and the people that are employed with the company, and what has been offered for clinical growth and development? So has it been good feedback, not so good feedback? How do you then develop going on that feedback?
Yeah, we've gotten great feedback. I mean, the engagement survey that you talked about, hey, people said, hey, I love the stuff that we're doing. I'm glad that it's more than it was and more, please, you know, which has been great. We also did a survey to all the clinicians a little bit earlier this year, and it was, what do you want to learn? How do you want to learn it? You know, are you interested in teaching? Things along those lines. And out of about, I think we get about 800 responses, which is
awesome. Pretty good. Yeah.
So, I mean, surveys, you're always, you never sure what you're going to get back. So, we were just listening about, hey, these are the things, that's where we pulled in. Like, yeah, we need to continue to do about 150 live courses per year across kind of the platform. We've certainly learned what dates are better than others. You know, there are hot times. There are definitely no-goes. You know, you get the week before Thanksgiving, nothing else is happening from a CEU perspective, even though some people need to renew at the end of the year because life is busy, right?
Yeah.
You know, so we figured out when people want to take stuff, figured out that people want more virtual offerings, more asynchronous offerings. We survey the heck out of people post-course. So I think in aggregate, our courses received a 4.83 out of 5, which, you know, I always just double it and do the math. So we're at like a 95, 96 on our test. So that's great. Let's continue how to get better. And I think people are looking for a couple things. One, yes, there is this desire for niche stuff. Our number one requested stuff that people want to do is concussion and vestibular.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because when I think about what patients are being seen in our clinic, it's a small percentage about that. So people are looking for things. They want to be able to help those patients. They probably want to be able to see more of those patients and have confidence to go out and seek more of those patients or be prepared when they're there. So you definitely get the things that are a little bit more niche from that perspective. And then also the boulders. Hey, I exercise, right? I want to get better at prescribing exercise. I want to prescribe with intentionality. I want to know how to progress things or regress things based off of different types of disorders or regions and things like that. So it really has this little bit of a divide where it's like, let's get very specialized, but then also let's get really good at the basics. And honestly, I couldn't have hoped for a better result from a 4.83 out of 5. Hey, we love what you're doing. Do more of it, please. And yes, we're going to tell you what we want. And it kind of takes those forms of, hey, niche practices, specialty type stuff, but then also continuing to get more solid on the basics.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, those two things are one of the things that we hear the most too out of here is, I want to become a vestibular therapist or learn more about it and the concussion piece. We have a pretty large concussion clinic at Children's Hospital or McKaylee Center in actually Waltham and Norwood. And the progression and periodization piece is huge too, because a lot of clinicians just kind of get, and some of us all fall into this, the laziness of the repetition of, oh, do 3 sets of 10. And okay, well, how do we get this patient to progress more to a more functional basis? And then how do we progress them to return to activity and to progress them into functional activity? And so I think that's important too. And in our district here, two of our CDs had started doing more of a clinical kind of educational piece on Fridays. And that's like, I think once every month or every few months they run it. And that's been has gotten a lot of traction here just for peers to get together and to work with one another, even if it's not a CEU-based thing, it's just to learn more from each other. So I think that's very good, you know, in our district and what we've seen going on with Kayla and Nick. So it's been really, really good in that regard.
Yeah.
For new clinicians coming out, whether it's somebody that's, you know, a new grad or someone looking for a job opportunity, what would you, what words of wisdom to find that type of, you know, position that's rewarding or an organization that they might be looking towards? What are some of the things like when you were coming out of school that you were looking for, and what could you advise those young students or ones that are just looking to make a switch?
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, from an advice perspective, I always say everyone's going to tell you a nice story and everyone and everything's going to look great on paper. But I would highly encourage people to go to clinics, mm-hmm. right? See the atmosphere, see kind of the types of patients that are there. You know, how do the clinicians kind of treat them? Is this an environment that's about learning and collaboration, or is this, hey, that person goes in that room and that person goes in that room and this would be your room. And you're like, okay, yeah, you know, yeah. Hoping I can learn. So I always just encourage people, go and visit, go and shadow. If someone doesn't allow shadowing, they probably have something to hide. I mean, mm-hmm. hand in hand with that is also don't make any assumptions. I think there are a lot of, there's just a lot of rhetoric in the profession that, mm-hmm. you know, every small mom and pop is the best.
Yeah.
Some of the ones you go into are the highest volume clinics that you've ever seen, mm-hmm. you know, or, hey, you know, ATI has 900 clinics, so that must mean that they're a mill. Well, actually, show up to Andrew's clinic and you're going to see clinicians that are seeing 9 or 10 patients per day.
Right.
And it's going to be collaborative and people have been there for a really long time. So whatever a professor told you, what you read on Reddit, any of those things, like validate it for yourself. We're not perfect by any means, but I really encourage people because whatever you've read is different than what you'll see. So yeah. I think go and see it for yourself, have an open mind. You know, I think, you know, the people that you're going to be working with earlier in your career are some of the most formative relationships that you'll have, whether they're officially kind of designated a mentor or not, because, you know, you just hear that ambient, hey, I like how that person explains that. Ooh, that's a really cool exercise. I'm going to ask them about that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, meet the people. That's why I think a lot of people ultimately choose for their first job to be where they did a clinical rotation, because it's, hey, I know these folks and I know, you know, kind of the environment is. And I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. So know that the people that you're going to be interacting with are important, you know, and you're going to make some decisions. I remember when I took my first job coming out of residency, I started a clinic by myself that was co-located with PM&R docs and neurosurgeons. Mm-hmm. And was that ideal for me coming out of residency? No, probably not. Probably it would have been, you know, better to be at a location that I could have continued to learn. Well, my story was I started my fellowship at around that same time. So I was still getting that modeling, mentorship, things along those lines, and was able to build a community of learning in that clinic. And so, but that's not for everyone, but you might say, okay, this is ideal, but I'm going to do it because I have this other kind of support and scaffold around me. So have an open mind. Don't just read and listen, go and see for yourself and know that, you know, not everything has to be ideal. You know, so much of your early clinic life is going to be what you make of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the grass is always going to be greener on the other side. People are going to change jobs earlier in their career, but it's amazing to me how many folks that we hire that are not fresh out of school. It's their second, third, fourth job because yep. Ultimately, you know, sometimes you're looking for something, you know, you're looking for a better situation, but part of the problem is kind of your affect and approach to it, you know, wasn't open. You didn't realize how much you could have learned in that situation.
Right.
You didn't realize that actually this kind of is the standard fare. It's not that, you know, Andrew is so mean to me when we have caseload rounds.
Right, right, right. You know, that's a great, a lot of great advice. And, you know, I say the grass is always greener until you're standing in the grass. And, you know, you have to always, the way I've always kind of spun it with new grads or even people that are looking to come on board is that ask the questions of, you know, who's available to me to make me better as a clinician? Like what is available? And again, see the dynamic in the clinic, see how the clinic's working, see who's in the clinic, look at the patients, kind of see the flow and what's going on and develop yourself and become, make it a career instead of a job, right? You want to build a career. You want to be cemented in the environment. If you think you're going to stay in the community, be known as the therapist in the community that's the upper extremity guru. Like, go and try to see if you can, you know, is there ability to me to go and work with physicians? Can I go observe surgeries? Like, how does that work? What's your relationship? And that's what, and I mean, I've been in the same clinic for almost 30 years. I mean, there's probably less of that around now than, you know, people that are switching jobs every 18 months. So I think it's what you make of it. It's the people you're around. It's the camaraderie. It's, is it a fun environment? How can I learn and get better? I think everybody wants to get out of school and learn, but you just learn for either 6 years or 7 years, depending on the program, or if, then if you go into residency or fellowship. So there's a lot of other stuff that's there for them. But you said it best, like, get into the clinic, observe. If you want to work as an OSS first or as an aide, like, get to know the community. But I think if you're someone that wants to stay in the area and the company has availability, research the company. Don't just like read it on Reddit, like you said, or hear it from a professor. Do a little background research, like look up the company, look who's there, maybe ask some questions, interview or talk to other people within the clinic. And I think that will be, no matter where you go to work, that's what's going to make your job become that career. So I think it was well said.
And no matter where you land, I mean, at best, when you choose an employer, what you're really selecting is an opportunity. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's what are you going to do with that opportunity, right? If 100%, you know, yep. I work in a children's hospital, right? But I choose not to make relationships across the hall with, you know, sports medicine physicians or PAs or nurses and things like that. And then I complain that I'm not treating any athletes.
Right.
Well, you know, and it's not two old guys with gray hair saying do more.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of saying, ultimately, you're only choosing the opportunity. What you choose to do with it ultimately is going to make that experience in terms of being the type of clinicians you want to be, seeing the type of patients that you want to. ATI or any other employer can have the best certificates, programs, whatever. But if you choose not to do it, then that's okay. You know, but then you can't say, oh, I didn't have any opportunity. It's just that you chose not to utilize what you had.
Correct. Well said. I thought that was that's an excellent explanation for sure. So when you're not doing all this fun research, development, educational stuff behind the desk, what do you like to do in your free time when it's Tom's time to step away? What do you like to do?
I mean, I'm a nerd. So when I'm not, you know, kind of here, I might be, you know, teaching online in another venue, things along those lines. You know, my family is very supportive of my obsession and passion, but I got a near 11-year-old and an 8-year-old. They're heavily involved in scouting.
Yeah, good.
So I'm a scout leader and do a good bit of camping and just kind of, you know, things through that. So it's nerd Tom and dad Tom. That's the hobby and the relaxation.
That's good stuff. Well, you can teach me how to tie a good knot and build a fire with a couple sticks at NLE so I can survive out in the wilderness.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Tom, listen, thanks for your time. I think this was a great conversation and hopefully some people get something out of this and we can continue to grow as a company and the platform can continue to grow because I think there's a lot of valuable stuff out there.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate the opportunity, Andrew. It's been a great conversation, and let's keep it going.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. Follow us on social media and check out our website.
The information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. Please consult a licensed healthcare provider for guidance related to your specific situation. We'll see you next week.